We are live. I am super excited. Today I am interviewing my friend Pam. Pam Farrell is an international speaker and author of 59 books. I think it's 60 now. Is that correct? Yes.
I'm writing my 60th.
Writing your 60th, including best-selling Men Are Like Waffles and Women Are Like Spaghetti. Her newest releases are Discover Wisdom in the Proverbs, a creative Bible study experience, which is fifth in the award-winning best-selling Discovering the Bible series. I love that. With co-author Jean E. Jones and Carla, how do you say Jones?
Carla
Dorincher, and Growing a Joyful Heart, which she co-authored through Karen Whitting. Pam and her husband, Bill, have been happily married for 43 years, and their love story is in my book, Real Life Romance. You can read how they met, and it's super good. And they co-direct LoveWise Ministries, and they make their home on a liveaboard boat docked in Southern California. I was born in Southern California. I am a California girl, so woo-hoo! Honestly, I got to tell you, Pam, I'm happy you're here because people are leaving in droves. And I'm like,
right. Okay.
We came back in 2000 from Texas. We'd planted a church in Austin. God called us back. We cried the whole way, but I always hashtag called to Cali. God called us to California. And I know people are leaving. And as the dark gets darker, the light shines brighter. And you and Bill are some of those lights in Southern California that I so appreciate. Today that we are going to talk about joy from your book, Growing a Joyful Heart. I have been loving this devotional. It is packed with your stories, other authors. I know I saw Dr. Michelle Bankston, who I love her. I love the history of Susanna, isn't it Susanna Wesley and John Calvin and Spurgeon, just history of people that had to fight for joy, that had to find joy in circumstances that were like trials, as well as biblical accounts of people in scripture. So, and today you're going to talk to our listeners just about that. What free resources do you have for our listeners?
So I'll be giving everybody in the audience who wants it, Infectious Joy, which is actually an ebook that I penned during the pandemic, and it has 30 verses about joy and a creative way to process them, plus some worksheets that I'll mention a little bit later. And then I have a brand new resource that I created for the launch of Growing a Joyful Heart, and that is Delightful Distractions, a way to like plan in joy moments, one a day, to keep our joy up and our stress and sadness down.
Where can we get copies of Growing a Joyful Heart?
Pretty much anywhere books are sold. If you want it fast, go to Amazon. If you want to save a little bit, go to christianbook.com. If you want a personalized copy and have me autograph, you can pick it up at LoveWise. Karen Whiting has it on her website. And our publisher is AMG, and they also have it.
So, okay, let's just jump into some of these questions. Your newest devotional, Growing a Joyful Heart. Tell me what led you to write it, and how are you celebrating the launch with this devotion on joy?
So I've been known for probably 20 years for just a simple phrase, choosing joy. And so Karen approached me when she has a whole series, a peaceful heart, a hopeful heart, a mother's heart. So she has a series. And when she was thinking about who like majors in joy, she's like, you have to be my co-author for this. And I love it because Karen herself is such an overcomer. I mean, she is a military wife that's like lived all over the world, moved her family, you know, and then her husband had cancer and now she's a widow. And so she's a girl who lives out her message. And right. So I'm like, yes, I would love to team with you because I see that you have the ability to hold on to joy through some really dark moments.
Let's unpack this. What is joy really?
Well, the New Testament describes joy with a word called charis. And it is in the Bible, in the New Testament, more than 74 times. So when God repeats himself, it matters. And so God really wants us to hold on to our joy. And joy is not just happiness. So some of the synonyms, when you look up the original word, could be things like thriving, flourishing, happiness, joy, like gladness. But my favorite is calm delight. That's my favorite biblical like synonym, calm delight. And the reason why that's my favorite is because it gives you something to do when you're stressed out or when you're depressed. Because joy is actually a verb. It's a choice to rejoice. Rejoice in the Lord always. Again, I say rejoice. That is a verb. And so I love calm delight. Let me just give you an example. We downsized and moved on to our liveaboard boat about 8 years ago to help care give Bill's then 88-year-old parents. Now Bill's mom's 93. Bill's dad's in heaven. But we moved all that and we gave it away, all of our worldly goods to people in ministry so that we could live on a liveaboard boat. Because that's like a little vacation, right? You know, joy on the water. So COVID comes around. They shut down all the marinas. And so and we are dealing with this COVID thing. We don't know what it is. And so we're thinking we're the best people to take care of Bill's parents 24/7 because we don't know what's going on yet. So we move to the office that Bill had put here on their property, which is an RV that's 300 square feet. So literally people would ask me, are you a happy camper? Cause that's what I was doing, you know? And I don't know about you, but that was like never on my goal sheet. I want to grow up and live in a trailer on my in-laws property. No, that was not on my goal sheet. And so I had to cultivate joy. And one of our friends are the LaFoons, Jay and Laura, and they're edutainers. And so they're great marriage experts, but they're fun and funny. So they held this date night and they said, okay, so when we just get on each other's nerves after being together 24/7 because of this COVID thing, we just go to different ends of the house. And Bill and I just start laughing because we don't have different ends of the house. We have like inside and outside. That's all we got. And so we are cultivating calm delight. And so my mother-in-law is agoraphobic and a hoarder and easily like erupts emotionally, volatile. And so if I were dealing with my mother-in-law and she was erupting, I would push pause and I would say, what would bring calm to my mom right now? What would bring calm to me right now? What would be a delightful distraction for my mother-in-law? What would be a delight for me to do right now? And so then I would take action after praying on that. Oh, what would bring calm to mom? And a delight. Oh, she loves lemon cookies. Let me go get some lemon cookies. What would bring calm to me? Yes. Put on praise music. Oh, grab Bill and let's go on a prayer walk. And on our prayer walks, we'd listen to Christian comedy on the way out and pray for each other on the way back. So it became just this choice to rejoice. And, you know, that really goes back to my friend Debbie, who was one of California's first female fire captains. And she works with PTSD first responders to help them get their joy back. And because first responders kind of see the underside of life, as pastors' wives, as do pretty much anybody who survived COVID. So we're all kind of there, PTSD. And they, to help them get their joy back, they would have them write down 30 things that they knew always brought them joy. And it could be simple things like your favorite latte or standing with your feet in the grass. And you would just write down 30 of them and then put one on your calendar every day. And so when I designed Infectious Joy, that giveaway, I put a joy blossom where there's 30 petals and you write down something joyful and then you put one on your calendar and you create your own joy moment.
And all of this is in the book. I have like so many, where's my camera? I've got so many notes and highlights of the things that you're talking about. Even the lemon cookies, like my mother-in-law had Alzheimer's and it was a difficult season. His mom had Alzheimer's. So we moved them up onto our property and man, that was hard, especially I was the daughter she never had. She loved me. And then all of a sudden she couldn't stand me.
Didn't know you. Oh,
I know. And it was devastating. But to have those joyful distractions, those, you know, like you just talked about, I read that in your book this morning, the lemon cookies that she loved so much, kind of redirect. I mean, my mother-in-law, if I let her put lipstick on, she was so happy that she looked pretty again.
And oh, it was so simple. Like mm-hmm. lipstick, it's a mm-hmm. choice you rejoice. I love yeah. that. You mm-hmm. had something. And if we pre-plan our joy, it's easier to hold on to it when life gets yeah. tough. Yes, and the yes. other thing is it's a choice you rejoice. When we hit those really hard moments, like my father-in-law, as he had more and more strokes, he lost mm-hmm. his ability to communicate with words. And he was an engineer. He put like men on the moon, designed the engines for the rocket ships and all that. So brilliant. But he started talking to my husband in numbers, like you 9768. And you know, we're like, well, we can tell by tone of voice that this is not good, 68. But we had to laugh. You know, if you don't laugh, you cry. And so right. we just maximize that. Even when on the day we laid him to rest, my son, Caleb, is a engineer. And so he went through and he put everybody's birthdays and anniversaries, and then all of the equations you would use to put men on the moon and like the sound barrier, like he did all his engineering equations, and we put numbers on Dad's casket and we prayed for him as we lowered it down.
Yeah. And that's choosing joy. It is honestly, truly, I think people see people that go through difficult circumstances and they find joy and they don't understand the plan or how they got there. It's Nehemiah. You talked about the building of the wall, Nehemiah 8:10, the joy of the Lord is your strength. But we do have to fight for joy, right? We have to plan to be joyful. Because there's in our book, The Marriage Mentor, my husband writes, but this is life for all of us. Talking about trials. And he says, this is life for all of us. Instead of looking at their life and they always have such an easy time of it. They don't go through the struggles that we go through. They do. But if their eyes are fixed on Jesus, they can go through it with joy and it doesn't destroy them. So I love your resource.
Yeah, so consider it all joy when you encounter various trials. Your husband's right on the money on that one.
Yes.
A choice to rejoice. The first thing to remember is that joy should be proactive. We need to plan our joy moments.
Yes, I love that. So you have 10 secrets in another book that you have called 10 Secrets of Living Smart, Strong, and Savvy. It's a handbook for women over 45. And in it, you share what harsh life transition hit you in midlife and how to begin to cultivate joy. I'd love for you to share that. I just got through midlife. No more hot flashes. All that's yes. behind me. I'm so grateful. I'm 62 years old. I'm in the home stretch with all that, I think.
So back when I wrote 10 Secrets of Living Strong, Smart, and Savvy, the first rendition was called Fantastic After 40. I was a pastor's wife. And so I looked around and I saw how much women were carrying in midlife. I mean, you're dealing with kids and teens and tweens and launching kids into college, paying for cars and graduations and proms. And then you start paying for weddings and it can be like expensive. So I had women on my heart that were going through this stage of life. And we were kind of, you can be hitting the pinnacle. You can be hitting your stride too. And so I went on a walk with Bill and I said, wow, isn't this amazing? You know, men are like waffles, like spaghetti's on the bestseller list. And you just built this new church building and our church is now the biggest in town after all this hard work for 17 years. And our kids are teenagers and they're making good choices. And I love being the director of women's ministry for you. I'm like, woohoo. It's like our life is a beautiful hand crocheted afghan. And then it's as if someone took a hold of one string and unraveled our life as we knew it. And how it hit was Bill, we were on a media tour and Bill wasn't feeling well. So we went to the doctor and the doctor said, Bill, how long have you had high blood pressure? And he's like, I don't. He's like, you do today. And that got Bill's attention because Bill's dad had a stroke when he was 40. Oh, wow. And left him disabled on half his body. And Bill's grandfather had a stroke when he was 42 and he died. And so my very healthy husband was no longer healthy. There was this erratic blood pressure stuff that they couldn't figure out. And so how it, like, it just kept building. The stress kept building in that Bill went to his home doctor and the doctor said, okay, you're a full-time writer, full-time speaker, and a full-time pastor. You're burning the candle at both ends, Bill.
Yeah. Yeah.
What advice would you give? You're a people helper. And Bill's like, you have some strategic life choices to make. And yeah. So to make a long, painful story shorter, he resigned his lead pastorate of a church we had served for, you know, 17 years, a church where we loved the people and most of them loved us. Mm-hmm. And right after Bill resigned, which is huge emotional for a guy. Then right after that, our son got hit in a football game and he had a concussion and a knee injury. Mm-hmm. And then the next night, our junior college son was hit in a football game, had a shoulder injury. He was a quarterback. And we were praying for scholarships for those boys through football because we're down to one income, you know. Mm-hmm. And then the next day, our little son in junior high was hit illegally in a football game, rushed to Children's Hospital in ICU, blood transfusion, all that. And so we got Caleb through that and we had him in the hospital. And toward the end of that week, I'm like, we have a speaking engagement, but like we need somebody to stay with Caleb, but we need groceries. So, okay, what if I go take the speaking engagement, hun, and you stay with Caleb? And so that's what we did. And on Sunday morning, I got a phone call that my 40-year-old brother had just had a heart attack. Could I come take care of his kids too? Yeah.
Oh my.
Other than that, Mrs. Lincoln, how'd you like the theater? You know, music and something on my face must have shown my stress. And so people started asking me, so Pam, how are you doing? And I didn't know how to answer them because the answer was like too long, too personal, too depressing. So why wreck their day? Yeah. And so I asked God, how do I answer these people? They're so kind. Mm-hmm. And God asked me a question. What kind of person do you want to be? And I said, well, I want to be the kind of person that can choose joy no matter what life sends your way. Because your word says in Nehemiah 8:10 that the joy of the Lord is our strength. So I choose you, Jesus. I choose joy. And it became like a motto that stuck with all my audiences, with all my friends. And the joy of the Lord is your strength. That joy in the Old Testament in Hebrew is gladness. It's sometimes rendered hold a festival with God.
I like that.
And the joy of the Lord is your strength. That word strength is your fortified city. It's so it's your fortress. And I like to think of that verse about the righteous, the name of the Lord is a strong tower. The righteous run in and are safe. And so joy in the Lord is where there is safety. It is our fortress. And so I just started sharing that. I started living it. I started saying it, choosing joy, choosing joy, choosing joy. And after I shared it at one conference, 4 years later, I came to the same conference ground and this woman ran up to me at the parking lot. And she's like, you just have to know. And I'm like, what? And she's like, well, I really love the joy of the Lord is your strength, that whole choosing joy thing. And I didn't really know why I liked it until I went home and I found a note from my husband who had left me for another woman. And I have a toddler. And so I said to my little boy, honey, we're just going to choose joy. And so that's what we've been doing for 4 years. And just this week, my washer was like broken. Suds were all, I was standing in the laundry room, suds up to my knees. My car was broken. My son was home with the flu. And I started crying. And my little boy ran in and said, remember, mommy, to enjoy. Joy really can be your strength.
Yes. And they see that. And then our kids grow up. And, you know, hashtag old ladies know stuff because we've lived it, we've seen it lived out. And then our children have observed. I always say, sometimes your trial is not about you. Sometimes the very trial you're enduring is to validate your testimony to your children. So that
and
they
grandkids.
Really, and your grandkids to see that you really do believe what you say that you believe. And even as I say that, I have trepidation about what's the next trial God's going to use to validate my testimony, because He gives us a break and then something else rises, because this is life for all of us. But I love that we can choose joy, that we can choose to rejoice, that we can create distraction, and it's a calm delight. So I'm going to stop here for the audio portion that will be on the Old Ladies Know Stuff broadcast. And again, this is, we're talking about Pam's book, Growing a Joyful Heart, and you can get it wherever books are sold. But we're going to, if you don't mind, Pam, if you have time, we're going to keep chatting a little bit longer. I'll stop the audio interview right there. But I want to keep going because I love your questions. Do you have time to keep going for a little bit?
Yeah, I'm great.
Okay, great. Okay,
I have lots of time to cultivate joy. It saves you time. You know, depression is really a time waster. And so as we choose joy, you know, we just get more done. We're more productive.
Yeah. And it's exhausting. Honestly, being living in discouragement and blaming others for our trials and resenting God for allowing our trials, it steals our joy. It renders our prayers powerless. And it makes us ineffective for the kingdom that God would do through us. Exceedingly abundantly above all we could ask or imagine, but it's Amen. Really, really trusting him when those trials seem to make no sense. So what is a status of joy in our society today?
So, okay, this is really kind of sad. About 20% of people say they're happy. That's not very many, right?
No.
And because of COVID, since COVID, we're at a 5-decade low in our joy quotient in society. So we will stick out like shining lights, like let your light so shine before men that they might see your good works and glorify your Father who's in heaven. And that word, let your light shine, it's like shine so bright you can't miss it. Like light the top of a mountain on fire to help get those ships in. You're a lighthouse of joy. And you'll stick out in this society if you are a person that cultivates joy, holds on to joy, helps other people have joy by sometimes reframing, you know, what they're going through, by listening to them, by pointing them to the character traits of God. Like God's the creator. So because God's the creator, he can create a path. He can create a way. He can create, you know, things for you to do. He can create solutions out of nothing. So we can really be a beacon of hope and help by having joy.
Yeah. And I loved in your book, in get the title right, Growing a Joyful Heart, reading of the historical people that you talked about, people that God used greatly, Spurgeon, and how he went through a time of depression, and Susanna Wesley lost children and had all kinds of trials in her life. And yet her steadfast joy and trusting the Lord, she raised up some amazing godly preachers from being a mom that just fought for joy and continued to trust God. So I like that because I think there's such a false doctrine. There's such a false teaching right now that if you do everything that's right, God will make you healthy, wealthy, and prosperous. If you have enough faith, you're going to not be sick. If you have enough faith and you speak it into existence, you're going to have all of your financial needs met. You're not going to, you know, have to live in a trailer on your in-laws' property and take care of it.
Right.
Your success in serving God is going to be blessed in monetary ways. And I know you can kind of speak to that, right?
Right. I just think that our joy is despite our circumstances. That's when people really ask us about our joy. They don't sit around and say, oh, I want to talk to the richest people because they'll have the answers for me. No, they want to talk to people who are in a tough place and are still able to hold on to Jesus, hold on to joy, hold on to their relationships. And so God shines brightest in the dark. And so we are candles in the dark when we choose joy.
Absolutely. And like, I love
like Ruth and Naomi, their story, so love it. Because I mean, Naomi was so depressed, she renamed herself, you know?
Call me Mara. Yeah,
I'm bitter. Yeah. And so she was but she was smart enough. Like I always tell women, when you don't know what to do, go back to the people, the places, and the promises of God where you know that you know that you know that you last heard God and God's voice. And that's what she did. She like went back home where she knew she would encounter the God of Israel. And then Ruth was smart enough to go with her.
Yeah.
And wow, what they, I mean, she had to glean the fields, not like, oh, okay, that, That's like what poor people do. I know, I was raised on a farm. We fields after the crops were, we went and picked up all the leftover, you know, apples and potatoes and whatever. So I've been that. I've been that gleaner of the fields. And but they hung in there and they kept chasing God, basically, and then obeying him radically.
Right.
And while the chapter four of Ruth is worth it all. Like in two paragraphs, you hear like happily ever after and then some. Yeah.
And then Orpah, the other sister-in-law, went back at Naomi's prompting. Like, you know what? I have nothing for you. Go back to what you know. Go back to what's familiar. Go back to your old, you know, gods and the culture that you're familiar with. And Orpah wept, but she went back. And we never hear from Orpah again.
Right. You don't know what happened to her. Yeah. No,
but the walk of Ruth's faith and the love for her mother-in-law, God was, man, did he show up? And boy, she got to rock that baby in her arms, be the grandma to that little one that eventually would grow up and be, you know, the ancestor, the grandfather of King David. Like, I love all of that.
Kind of Jesus. That's kind of important.
Yeah, kind of important. So sometimes it's hard. And honestly, when you look at Naomi's life, she followed her husband because there was a drought in Israel. So she followed her husband to a foreign land.
Yeah.
Really probably not what God wanted them to do.
Right. And right. He was kind of like not a man of faith and she stood by him. Yeah. And then he dies and leaves her there. Then her sons die and leave her there. Yeah. So, I mean, this is like a great story because it shows a storm, a hurricane emotionally in Naomi's life. And yet she turns and chases God. I just love it.
Yes. And her zeal to chase after God had such an impact on her daughter-in-law who said, I'll go where you go. I love that. So yeah, you're right. Our light shines brightest when we have nothing but faith, when all of our life has fallen apart. And even as I'm preaching this to myself, it scares me. As you know, God uses those seasons, and I have stories and I know you do too, but let's move on to another question. Give us some practical ways to cultivate joy in a woman's life, maybe in their marriage or in their family.
Yeah. So the first was proactive, you know, do that joy blossom, make that list. Mm-hmm. The second is joy is reflective. In my, in that infectious joy book, I have a handout and it came from a two-page spread in my own bullet journal that I call it radiant joy. It's just the sunshine with rays of the sun. And every day at the end of the day, I write down a praise. I thank God for something that happened in my day, something positive. You can use a little calendar, you know, those giveaway kinds from insurance or the dollar store. It doesn't matter where you write it, but just write it down day after day. And what that does is it helps you cultivate that attitude of gratitude. Mm-hmm. And gratitude and joy are connected to each other so many times in the Old and New Testament. It's like it changes our heart when we are reflective and we remember the goodness of God. Like just the word remember is in the Old Testament like hundreds of times. So that, again, it's a priority of God. So joy is reflective. And then joy is creative. One of the things that we do in growing a joyful heart, and then also in my Bible study, discovering joy in Philippians, is it has a bunch of art, coloring pages.
Love it.
Whether you draw or you do a fine art or you sew, you put on music and you dance, when you do something creative, the way God wired us is our problems resolve on one, our problems reside on one side of our brain and creativity is on the other side of our brain. So when we are creating, we cannot think of our problems.
I did not know that. Say that again. That's so good. Say it again.
You don't even need drugs. You just need to create. Our problems are on one side of our brain, creativity on the other side. So do something creative. Pull out the coloring book and color with your grandkids. Something creative.
That's life-changing.
You know, I just think, you know, God set that example. In the beginning, God created. First five words. So when we are functioning in the way that God made us to function, creative, he rescues us It's beautiful. And so I was encouraged to do something creative. And so every day in Growing a Joyful Heart, we have a Choose Joy Today. It's like a takeaway. Mm-hmm. And some of them are creative. Some of them are fun like a party. Some of them are splash out joy to other people. But it's something tangible that you mm-hmm. can do. Again, mm-hmm. joy mm-hmm. is a verb.
Yes. Yeah. Love it. Love it. That's so great. Okay. So what about in your marriage or your family? Like specifically? Right.
Joy, the last one is joy is relational. Okay, and okay, who would you rather spend time with? Grumpy Gus or happy Hannah? I mean, yeah, we want to spend time with people who are delighted that we're in their presence. Like when my husband, when we see our grandkids, he'll go, Sutton, Zeke, like he's thrilled, like they're like more important than anybody in the whole world because they are yes, to us. Are. And they'll just run into each other's arms. And my grand girls, we get on Zoom because I don't live in the same city. And she knows I will stop everything to read and color with her or listen to what she had going on during her day. Yeah. And in our marriage, it's the same way. If we are delighted that our husband just walked in the door, like I always say, do the twist. Come on, let's twist. That means turn around and look at him when he comes in the door and be excited that he's there. Just small things make a big difference in our marriages. So I always say, what way can you cultivate joy with your kids, with your grandkids, for your husband? You know, when I go out of my way, when I'm at the grocery store to bring home one of Bill's favorite snacks, I don't spend any more time, but I thought of him.
Yeah.
And so it's just being thoughtful. That's a lot what it is to splash out joy, is remembering somebody and what will lower their stress, what will raise their ability to handle the stress of the day. Anytime you think of another person, you're going to be giving them joy.
Mm-hmm. And honestly, that's a peek into, I know some people might be watching or listening, wondering how they can cultivate friendships. You know, maybe they go to church every week, they haven't connected with anyone, they come in as soon as church is starting, they leave as soon as it's over. If they are standing in the lobby and no one's talking to them, they pull out their phone to stay distracted because I don't have to feel rejected. If I'm busy on my phone, I won't notice if no one's not coming up and talking to me. Sometimes it takes courage to spread your joy. And honestly, it's genuine joy, right? Joy in Christ, that it's not just pretending that everything's okay, but it's finding ways to spread relational joy to other people. Sometimes that's just smiling at an elderly woman that comes up to talk to you. So I could talk to you all afternoon, but I'm going to respect your time. And I'm going to put up here where people can find you. That is your website, correct? Love-wise.com.
Our ministry is Love-Wise. We like to say we park ourselves on the corner of God's love and God's wisdom. Mm-hmm. And our verse is Proverbs 19:8, the one who gets wisdom loves life.
I love that. That's really great. Thanks so much, Pam. I have so enjoyed this conversation with you. God bless you.
Thank you.